Live from New York, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to be talking about testosterone in depth, one of our classrooms on the air. And that's because I'm willing to bet that probably 95% of the men listening right now, including physicians, scientists, nutritionists, don't know what their hormone levels are. You should, because if they're low or high, you're a substantial increase of a heart attack or stroke. So our good news to save lives today, with positive information, the cholesterol question. I'll also be sharing a lot of in-depth information from Bill Falloon, Life Extension, who's done more research on this than anyone else I know. Also today, I'm going to share the latest on health and healing from around the world. And for example, what does the sense of purpose of life have to do with protecting your heart? But Mount Sinai Hospital's done research on this. I've been suggesting we have an onion a day, or let's say a half an onion a day, in order to keep a stroke away, because it helps thin the blood. It also kills viruses and bacteria. It's very good for everything. But now, looks like nutrients from the onion can improve your condition if you have a high blood sugar or elevated cholesterol, from Delta State University. Then we're also going to be looking at most men with borderline testosterone are at increased risk or have depression. So this will be able to put some pieces to the puzzle together of how a large segment of the male population goes through a silent depression. They don't talk about it. But people around them can feel the withdrawal of the energy. Those men are also at greater likelihood of having cancer, heart disease, stroke, prostate cancer, and suicide. So the good news is, we'll show you what is happening, and it's not behavioral. It's biochemical. George Washington University on that one. Nuts, all types of nuts, can help lower metabolic syndrome in teenagers, University of Texas. And a lot more on health and healing. And also today, I don't know how much we'll get to, but time allowing, I'd like to talk about rationalizing lunacy. I'm sure that you have all heard the so-called best and brightest. Going back through my entire lifetime, we tend to defer to these people. They come from pedigree families. They have gone to Ivy League schools. They always end up in the most powerful positions, advising presidents, running World Bank, International Monetary Fund. Are they brighter than the rest of us? Do they have solutions we don't have? Or are they the intellectual acting as a servant of the state? We'll look at this. I've written some issues, as well as that of Andrew J. Basevich from Tom Dispatch. Also today, if time permits, U.S. jails are warehouses of the sick and poor and low-risk people. Julia Stache from The Guardian. I think we need to know about this. From the environmental segment today, who knew? Going clear back to the early 1960s, that the U.S. government and Union Carbide had hooked up with Halliburton to get rid of radioactive waste. Where do you think they put it? Wow. Didn't know this. You will today. Also, the latest on Fukushima. UCLA researchers said that, well, quote, Fukushima not only is affecting that local area, but also worldwide. Immediately, the iodine-131 plume moved eastward, reaching the U.S. West Coast, then covering the entire northern hemisphere. Significant concern on the safety of the population and environment worldwide, end quote. We didn't know that. We weren't told that. To the contrary, we were told we don't have a problem over here. It's over there. No, it isn't. It's here. It's been here. And going on 4 years, according to this report, is getting bad. So we'll get ahead of that curve. Let's begin. First, let's take a look at some of the basics when it comes just to good quality change that can make a difference. Anytime I'm talking with someone, counseling, I always try to find the underlying real cause of disease. Because you can't really give a good diet if the person's not going to stick with it. So you better get some input from the person, how much they're willing to do, what they're not willing to do, what they'll change, what they're not willing to change. And it's not often that people are asked these questions. Are you willing to make the changes? Is your life worth it? And when people live a life without value, especially spiritual value, they generally give up. They become apathetic. And we see millions of people giving up. They go through the rituals of life, but they have nothing at the core of it that grounds them, gives them joy and fulfillment and happiness. Hence this article from Mount Sinai Hospital that I found interesting. And it was presented at the American Heart Association's annual meeting. Quote, having a high sense of purpose in life may lower your risk of heart disease and stroke. The new analysis defined purpose in life as a sense of meaning and direction and a feeling that life is worth living. Now, previous research has linked purpose to psychological health and well-being, but the new Mount Sinai analysis found that a high sense of purpose is associated with a 23% reduction in death from all causes and a 19% reduction in heart attack, stroke, with a need for coronary artery bypass surgery or cardiac stenting procedure. So, let's put these together. I believe that probably two-thirds of the entire American population right now are under enormous stress. You wouldn't always recognize it because people like to put on a friendly face, put on a good exterior. But if you see the amount of obesity and depression and anxiety and diseases that come from that, stress-related diseases, you'll see that the vast majority of Americans, both adults and children, are suffering. One of the reasons that we suffer is historically we have always prided ourselves on what we could do to go through any crisis, learn lessons, and go on with our life. What didn't kill you made you stronger. We've all heard that cliche. But I believe today things will never go back to the way they were. And I think that's one of the reasons that Bill O'Reilly and Sean Hannity and Rush Limbaugh, Laura Ingraham, and many people who have a conservative background support these people. I do not believe that they're members of a cult, as some on the left has suggested, or cultish. I believe that the people who are their heroes are borderline sociopaths, if not full sociopaths. But I believe that people want something that is grounded in a reality that does not stress them. And hence, on a subconscious level, an epigenetic level, we revert back to the comfort of our conditioning early in life. And most of us, not all, but most of us, perceive our upbringing where there was greater freedoms. Could you imagine when we were growing up? Our parents wouldn't allow us to travel more than one block without being supervised. We were never supervised. We just went out in the morning and we came back for lunch. Then we went out, we came back for dinner. And we would come back sometimes with a broken bone or cut up or scraped. And that was just kind of, okay, that's all right. We had a different life. People didn't lock their doors. We have changed in many parts of the world, but not everywhere. There's still places where you can actually, in some Scandinavian countries, go in and purchase your food, and then you pay for it. It's based on a trust system. Now, you might be able to do that in some communities in the United States, but not in all. So there's a part of us that when we see the world becoming more insecure, and when there's so many things happening that just are not a part of our conditioning, it wasn't supposed to happen this way. We weren't supposed to have a 9/11. We weren't supposed to have all these crises. We weren't supposed to have our homes taken away or a debtor's prison facing us if we can't pay a bill. So we're not prepared for it. So we withdraw into sublimating. I'll go into my comfort food. I can't change anything in my life or the people around me or the world I'm in or the circumstances, but I can sure eat something that makes me feel better. Or I'll watch television. I'll distract myself. I'm not going to pay attention to what's going on out there. I just can't understand it. It's too complicated. I don't know who to believe. And what does it matter anyhow? It's inevitable. The fatalist. And as a result, they become preoccupied with trivia, things of no significance. So when you work with people enough and enough people, you begin to see patterns. And one of the things that I see that can help is to have a sense of purpose that doesn't just involve you, but involves making a better world for other people. In other words, kindness to strangers, sharing the love that you have with other people, not just your guild or tribe or group or ethnicity, but people. And especially making room in your heart, in your time, in your day, for that which improves the quality of other people's lives, where you may not even get a thank you. They might not even know you existed. And that's why I always commend those people who spend some time helping others without the need for help, because they're doing it to reinforce their own spiritual values. So when I see that people have reconnected to their authentic spiritual self and start then to appreciate how conditioned we all have become or are, and what happens when we make our decisions from our conditioned epigenetic mindset, which is almost all raw, hypersensitive emotion. Hence, we react instead of going to neutral and reasoning. Then I see that we have positive options, because I've seen a lot of people make changes, and then I add in something new to the formula that wouldn't have been there in the 60s or 70s or 80s, but is today. A sense of purpose for the we in life, not just the me in life. I'm seeing very positive results with people working together, sharing common interests. One person may have money, another person have skills. You combine the two together and you share in a common ideal. I believe that this is the future for those who want to break free of their conditioning and live a more authentic life. But you can't live an authentic life unless there's a real sense of community service involved. So you feel good about every day because you know you're doing something that's not just selfish, not just have more stuff or get into a better place in society where you can manipulate what you have or other people. We've seen the consequences of people doing that. So look at the we. Look at all the things you could do with other people. Get outside of what's in it for you. And that's the conditioned self. And look for a real sense of purpose. And that is something that could help all of us make it a better world. And now they're doing the research on it. Separately, there are a lot of good superfoods, but one of them is the onion. The onion lightly sauteed, or better still, sweet onions raw. Well, according to Dallas State University, quote, the extract of onion bulb, Allium sepa, strongly lowered high blood glucose, which is your blood sugar, and total cholesterol levels in this laboratory experiment. So, more so than just a drug like metformin. And that was published in a paper in the Endocrine Society's annual meeting. Quote, onion, it's cheap, available, and has been used as a nutritional supplement. It has the potential for use in treating patients with diabetes. And it doesn't take a lot, 200, 400, 600 milligrams per kilogram body weight. That's not a lot. So I would suggest a half an onion a day. And the way that you make it palatable is, if you want it raw, is you get a sweet onion, cut it, rinse it, dice it, rinse it under cold water for about 30 seconds, and then use it in a salad, a marinade, or stuff it in a baked potato, mix it into some brown rice, because you change the texture, and that's really nice. But you're gonna lower your blood sugar, but you're also going to lower your blood pressure. You're going to naturally thin the blood, and that helps prevent a stroke. Even on a flight, on an airplane, if you were to make a salad, that's what I do on a long flight. I make a micro salad. I make microgreens. I grow microgreens and then sprouts. And then I might have 20 different microgreens, 5 or 6 different sprouts. And then I dice up a full onion. I put that in there. And then some, you know, sauerkraut is great. And some raw radishes are terrific. And then make a honey mustard sauce. You put that separate. And then when you want your salad, you pour that salad dressing over it. Has some cayenne pepper, which thins the blood. By the way, it's nice. Build up with small, build up gradually. Don't start on an empty stomach because you might feel that burning sensation. It's not actually burning you, but you might feel that. It actually heals ulcers. It heals lesions, but it thins the blood. So my suggestion is always take your cayenne pepper with a protein shake. That way you won't feel anything, and it's doing great. But on a flight where you don't want to develop a blood clot, thrombosis that could kill you, you take cayenne pepper, and you put it in your, you know, protein, and you take a protein shake with cayenne pepper, vitamin E, vitamin C, coenzyme Q10, and quercetin. That'll keep you from having to concern yourself that your blood might thicken and you end up with a clot, because all those do what an aspirin does, but without any of the harmful effects, all healing effects. And then the onion is the top of it. It thins the blood naturally. And then also, we run into the issue of depression. Men cope in different ways. Women have their own unique coping skills. It depends upon a person's life energy, also how they cope. But for the majority of men who are not dynamic, assertive, dynamic, supportive, or dynamic, aggressive, who cope by doing things to in their life and with other people, the adaptive supportive, which is the majority of men, they don't communicate everything they feel. They don't like to focus undue attention upon their feelings, but that doesn't mean they don't have them. And one of the best examples of this is when I had a great uncle that was a adaptive supportive. It was adaptive assertive as an engineer. He was quiet but assured. He was always looking to find solutions for everything. His house was always the neatest house to go to because he's the one who had the goldfish pond in the backyard. And he knew how to make it deep enough so in the wintertime the fish didn't freeze. And even though he just had a normal backyard, it didn't look normal. It looked wonderful. Everything he did always was better than anything else. My backyard looked like a backyard from World War I battlefield. We had to talk out there in trenches, and we were all athletic, and it was a mess. Different energies. I didn't care about that. But every single tool in his workshop, you had an outline drawn so you knew where to put it back. He had these glass jars with every type of screw and bolt and nut for anything. And he was meticulous in everything he did. And he'd have freezers of food, all dated and typed. But I also saw in him his hobbies were where he would spend his time downstairs in the basement. He would spend months working on projects. Then he'd finish the project. Then a month or two would go by. Then he'd be months again on a project. Now, it wasn't that he wasn't social, but he spent a lot of time alone doing that. Jump ahead. I decided I love old cars, but I'm very patient. It may take me 10 years before I can afford to get an old car, and I enjoy it. And then I either give it as a gift to a friend in need, or I trade it in and get a different one. We're talking about cars that actually had style, class, 57 Chevy, 55 Buick, 54 Plymouth, real beautiful cars. And it's fun on Sundays to go downtown and in the town where I live and look at all the people my generation driving their antique Harley Davidson, their antique cars, and they park there and everybody has a conversation. And guys just put out their lawn chair and sit there all day long and have a conversation, tell you everything about that car. So I went over to Fort Lauderdale, where in the wintertime there's an auction. Here, if you've never been made aware of this, this is really neat. If you like cars, antique cars, there's probably 500 given on a day. And it's once a year. And you go out and you preview the cars. And the ones you really want to look at are the ones where the guys are sitting under an umbrella. And you can tell they're just as happy as they can be. And they have trophies in the trunk, and you see these cars, and they're in mint condition. They're 100% restoration, meaning every bolt, everything in that car has been completely redone. It's perfect, just like it came off an assembly line. And then what just drops you, you just can't believe it. If you go in a regular market, if you went to a car dealership and you said, I'd like a 57 Chevy 100-point restoration convertible, they say, okay, that's $95,000. You think, wow. That's a lot of money. Well, that's what they're going for. And then you see at auction, they go for $30,000. How in the world can they go for $30,000? If you know anything about these parts, he's got $60,000 in it. So you talk with the guy and you say, how long did it take you to redo this? And he said, well, about 5 years. How much you got in it? Well, I got a chart there. And they always do this. They show you every single receipt so you see how much they paid. Well, I got about $55,000 in it. Be you're aware this car is probably going to go for around $30,000 to $35,000, maybe $40,000. You say, yeah. Why would you sell it? And here's the takeaway message. My joy is not in owning that car. My joy is in having quality alone time where I have nothing in my mind except the moment I'm in. And that gives me some balance and peace of mind. So I'll take the money, whatever it is, and I'll go down to the junkyard, and I'll look, and within a year, I'll find somewhere an old, totaled piece of junk. But I will start to look at that. As this one guy said to me, quote, I'll look at that like Michelangelo looked at a giant block of marble or granite, and I will bring that back to life. And during that period of time, I'll spend money on it over probably 4, 5, or 6 years. Probably cost me around $8,000 to $10,000 a year. But without that, I would be depressed. I've even had guys tell me they would have committed suicide. So there's a whole part of being a man that our society has not understood. We have made harsh judgments about men wanting to go through another infantile period and reverting back, and they're lost interest in their marriage or their relationship, or they're just distant. They need to see a psychiatrist. They need to be on some kind of meds. Not true. Several things happen. If a person mainly, not exclusively, but mainly if they're an adaptive life force, meaning they're a worker bee, the one thing they can do that will not upset everyone in their life is they can work on a single project and be given time to be in their own world, in their own head, in that special place that some men need to be. But here's what happens simultaneously. They're also reducing their testosterone levels. Now, growing up, we never knew what testosterone was, except that the more of it you had, the better it was because you were more manly. Nothing could be further from the truth. Because when a man has a very low testosterone, they end up depressed. How does the man show depression when they're losing their testosterone? Frequently, it's emotional withdrawal. The things used to give them joy and happiness in life are no longer present. They no longer connect. Their libido is diminished. They no longer have a drive, sexual drive at all, or sexual interest. They no longer have the same desire to be around people, including family members or friends, which then further depresses them because they start getting the negative feedback, the harsh feedback, the high-level criticism, the harping, the anger, the rage thrown against them, and they don't know how to respond. So they go further into this dark, dank, and unrequited place, this depression. If we were only evolved enough as a society to understand what's going on, thousands of men would not have committed suicide. Right now, we have a lot of men committing suicide. Which is the greatest number of men committing suicide? Men going through their 50s and 60s. That's when your testosterone really drops. From George Washington University, quote, men with borderline testosterone levels have higher rates of depression and depression symptoms than the general population, new research findings show. Quote, over half the men referred for borderline testosterone levels have depression. Well, so how a person deals with depression, since men are not told how to deal with depression, and so we keep it within us. And, but you can't keep something within you without other people who are around you being aware of it. So I'm asking the people who are around someone who may be going through depression or you may think is withdrawing, understand you may have something very basic here. You may have something as simple as a testosterone deficiency. And if that's the case, you can bring that testosterone back up. You can overcome your depression. You can reconnect with what's important in life to you. And whether it's being gregarious and outgoing, like an adaptive aggressive, creative and dynamic in your creativity and adventurous and breaking the rules, like a creative assertive, the artist, being able to go out and take on fights like a dynamic assertive, you'll be able to do that easier. But it's just something we never look at. When was the last time any man in this audience had a doctor tell him, let's check your testosterone level? Because if it's low, that could affect your whole life. You could be more likely to be depressed. If you're depressed, more likely to be overweight, to eat bad foods, to not be able to properly communicate and share the love that you once had and would have again that you could show with your loved ones. And you're less likely to die. Testosterone levels are always elevated when we're young. But as we age, they go down a lot. And yet, this is one area where American medicine is totally lost. You ask the average physician, what is a normal, an ideal testosterone level, free testosterone level? I don't think they'll know a free testosterone from regular testosterone. So what I want to share with you now is our classroom on the air. It's a little more in-depth. It's a little more scientific, but I'll break it into lay language. So at least you'll know there's some good things you can do if you have your testosterone check, which I hope you will. Because otherwise, either high testosterone or low testosterone, you end up with a greater chance of heart attack, stroke, and prostate cancer, and not good. Now, of considerable interest is the relationship between testosterone blood levels and cardiovascular events like a heart attack and stroke. In a revealing new study, researchers identified 2,416 men who were not on any kind of testosterone-affecting treatment. These men were given a bunch of blood tests, including total testosterone and estradiol. By the way, estradiol, E-S-T-R-A-D-I-O-L, that's estrogen in men. And the first observation was that men with increasing levels of testosterone and decreasing, either high or low, you end up with greater diabetes, hypertension, and body mass fat. That's your belly, pot belly. Compared to men with the highest testosterone levels, those with the lowest were twice as likely to have a cardiovascular event. So you don't want it really high, and you sure don't want it really low. These men were followed for 5 years. Now, the men who, for example, the group that had were in the highest statistical area of testosterone, the 550 ng per deciliter, had a 30% lower risk of cardiovascular disease. Any level of total testosterone below 550, you increased your risk. So keep that in mind. Now, mainstream doctors know nothing about hormone balance. If you ever wonder why so many deaths are directly caused by medical errors, look no further than the obvious mistakes made by doctors who design human clinical trials. It has long been known that aging men are at risk of having excess activity of an enzyme called aromatase, A-R-O-M-A-T-S-E, matase. The effect of surplus aromatase is that too much testosterone is converted to estrogen. Aging men have a propensity to develop dangerously high levels of estrogen, combined with woefully inadequate testosterone. Elevated estrogen can sharply increase your risk of a heart attack or stroke or promote platelet aggregation. And platelet aggregation is where your blood cells clump together, forming clots. And that ends up causing coronary artery disease. And higher estrogen in men also increases inflammation, which causes unstable plaque to rupture and occlude in a coronary artery, thus creating a sudden heart attack. Now, just imagine designing a study where a huge dose of testosterone cream is applied to dilapidated men with a high prevalence of obesity, hypertension, diabetes. These men all suffered limited mobility, and many had known cardiovascular risk, and all these physically impaired men had very low testosterone levels, which was a 243 NGDL at baseline. But the doctors never bothered to check their estrogen levels. Shame on them. That is medical negligence. They had to stop the study early. Why? Because there was a 460% increase in adverse cardiovascular events, like heart attacks and strokes. Why? Because no one paid attention. The fact that cream with low testosterone, the combination of the two, caused a spiking in estrogen. Bad to the bone. Now, the authors admitted that testosterone creams can be converted to estrogen and cause these cardiac problems. So when I hear people say, oh, I'm, you know, my doctor recommended an estrogen, a testosterone cream, I said, did your doctor check your estrogen level? No. Are you aware that that testosterone cream is going to cause your estrogen to spike, put you at risk of a heart attack or stroke? No. Well, understand that. By the way, how do you end up getting an elevated estrogen level if you're a woman or a man that puts you at risk of dying? Obesity. Just being overweight alone causes estrogen levels in men to spike. And the reason that men grow breasts is that abdominal fat tissue synthesizes huge amounts of that same enzyme, aromatase, which converts their testosterone to estrogen. Obese men with elevated estradiol, estrogen, are strongly advised to take aromatase inhibiting agents. Now, by applying a high dose testosterone cream, estrogen levels would be expected to spiral upwards in many of these unhealthy men, and that just means that you're going to end up with greater likelihood of thrombosis, inflammation, a heart attack, or stroke. So, what can we do to help men protect their hearts? First, most people know that when we talk about the HDL, the high-density lipoprotein, that protects against atherosclerosis and subsequent heart attack. That's a good thing. Exercise helps you have a higher HDL. But few people understand is the critical role that testosterone plays in enabling HDL to remove buildup cholesterol from arterial walls. We want to clean the walls of our arteries and then heal the epithelium, and we can do that. Now, HDL removes cholesterol from the artery walls and returns it to the liver for safe disposal via a process known as reverse cholesterol transport. Testosterone enhances HDL-induced reverse cholesterol transport from the arterial wall, and this is one of testosterone's unique and life-saving anti-atherosclerotic effects. And while a person can reduce their arterial wall exposure to cholesterol through healthier diets, there's your vegan diet, and juicing, and lots of greens, chlorophyll, wheatgrass juice, ginger, ginger juice, lemon, lemon juice, cabbage. And also there's certain nutrients you can take as well. The average person still synthesizes about 750 milligrams every day of cholesterol in their peripheral tissues, meaning outside the liver. If there is any distortion in the HDL-mediated removal of cholesterol, meaning reverse cholesterol transport from the arterial wall, the consequence is atherosclerosis. Said differently, testosterone is required for optimal transport of excess cholesterol from your tissues and blood vessels to your liver for processing and disposal. In the testosterone-deficient state, when you just don't have enough, reverse cholesterol transport is compromised, and the excess cholesterol cannot be removed from your artery walls. That's why it's so important. And remember, a low testosterone, you're going to increase your risk of coronary artery disease. And also, you've got to get your free testosterone blood levels at the right measurement. So, what do we do? All right. We want to reduce our risk of stroke, of prostate cancer, of heart disease, clean our arteries. The fact that 99% of men today have no idea what their blood estrogen levels are helps explain the epidemic of age-related disease. In fact, an article published in the Journal of the American Medical Association measured blood estradiol, the amount of dominant estrogen, in 500 men with chronic heart failure compared to men in the balanced estrogen group. Men in the lowest estradiol were 217% more likely to die during a three-year follow-up. And also men in the highest level, the meat eaters, 133% more likely to die. So if you are stressed, you drive estrogen. If you are eating a meat-based diet, high-protein diet, estrogen. If you have body fat, estrogen. If you have all three, you've got a prescription for dying. And also low testosterone increases prostate cancer risk. So, I'm going to share with you something that is probably different than your physician, what I believe are the optimal free testosterone levels. And I believe that to maintain free testosterone in the range of 20 to 25 PG per ml of blood. And others will say, oh, you could go to 15 PGs, I would say no. Now, that is what I would suggest. And then as far as the total free testosterone is the biologically active form of this hormone measured in the blood. When looking at total testosterone levels, two different things, you should strive for a moderately youthful range of 700 to 900 M, that's N as in Nancy, G as in George, DL, which is deciliters. Now, conventional doctors say, oh, you can go as low as 193. No, you shouldn't. And remember, you make estrogen, the men make estrogen, women make it in their ovaries, in reproductive tissue. Men make it in a different way. Aging men sometimes have too much aromatase activity, which causes their testosterone to convert to excess estradiol. But normally, your testicles are where you make it. So what can you do? Well, you can get on a healthier diet. And a healthier diet is a plant-based diet. Living foods, plant-based, lots of walnuts, almonds, pistachios, pine nuts, chia seeds, pumpkin seeds, sprouted pumpkin seeds, sprouted sunflower seeds, chia nut butter, All of these are ways of rebuilding natural levels of testosterone. Exercising daily, that also helps. Using your muscles by resistance exercise, that helps as well. So do these things, and then get into working on something that gives you joy and happiness. And if you can do it with other people, all the better, because then you have a supportive system. When I'm training, which I am now, I realize when I'm out there doing 10 miles, like yesterday morning, the difference when I used to train in New York City with all the running club members and how much joy there was in that, and how one person would take a lead and then suddenly everybody would pick up the pace. And we ran great races. There wasn't a race in the entire country that we didn't have a winner, including all the marathons, for over 20 years. When you train alone, it's more challenging to push yourself. Can you? Yes. But you have to do a lot of good guided visualization. But I'm a big believer in the we, not just me. I'm Gary Noll. Also, make sure you get your DHEAS levels checked. And they should be between 350 to 490. All right, in your measurement. Estradiol, 20 to 30. So now you have your measurements. On an upcoming program, I'll go through herbs and supplements that can also help. Back in a moment with my guest, who is standing by, Dr. Gabriel Cousins. Gabriel is a longtime friend, and we will talk about helping to cure diabetes with a focus on women's health in just a moment. Please stay with us. Have you with us, everyone. I was just told we have our guest on the line. Let's say hello to Dr. Gabriel Cousins, C-O-U-S-E-N-S. Dr. Cousins has been investigating diabetic causes and complications and successfully treating him and reversing this growing medical condition. He received his medical education from Columbia Medical College and later completed his psychiatric residency. He is the founder and resident physician at the Tree of Life Rejuvenation Center in Patagonia, Arizona. And he also is the author of many books, including There Is a Cure for Diabetes. His website is treeoflifecenterus.com. Nice to have you with us today.
It's a delight to be with you, and you're having read your book on diabetes, too. We're very much in the same line of thinking, which is this is a worldwide epidemic. It's an endemic, as you point out in your book, 85% of the kids with diabetes are overweight. It's multi-generational level, all being very serious threat to the health and well-being of the general public.
Well, here's what we're going to do, because we had difficulty reaching you, so now that you're on, I'm going to keep quiet and just ask you one question, allow you to go to the end of the program answering it. Tell us what women specifically need to know about the role of lifestyle and exercise, nutrition, food, supplements, anything and everything that can help the women in this audience who are pre-diabetic or diabetic. Take your time.
Okay. Most of the people I see are women, because women are more interested in their health. Women are more fastidious, and they actually care a little bit more than men. Not people like you and I who are also fastidious, but women in general care more. One of the things that happens when we eat well, which is a lower complex carbohydrate diet, which is key for healing this, when you're on the right diet, which is a lower complex carbohydrate diet, higher protein and higher fat, fat does not make you fat. Carbohydrates makes you fat. That's key. It's a big breakthrough for the women, because most women in our society, whether they're vegan or whatever, are eating too much carbohydrate. So the first major shift is going to about a 25 to 35% while we're healing carbohydrate diet. Now, when I mean carbohydrates, I don't mean grains. I don't mean white sugar, white flour, and junk food. What I mean is vegetables, sprouts, and leafy greens is your main source of carbohydrates, like people used to do prior to the last 10,000 years. So there's something to be really said. That's the major breakthrough for women, is simply getting away from the high carbohydrate diet, which most of America is on. As I want to say again, the main thing that makes a difference is a lower carbohydrate diet. Now, people have known about carbohydrates being the main cause of obesity since the 17th century. The French were writing about it. You know, that's the main cause. So that's the big shift. That's one aspect. Another aspect is vegan, because vegans actually don't put on as much weight in terms of the diet, and also eating meat, fish, chicken. Basically, the main research shows it's 35 to 50% more incidence of diabetes. So those are your big players. A third player around the food is organic, because pesticides, herbicides are part of the toxic input that disrupts the normal signaling. So I want to give a brief definition which will make everything make sense. So diabetes is a epigenetic and genetic downgrade of your program, which disorders your signaling systems, insulin and leptin. That may sound pretty fancy, and adiponectin, which is a hormone coming out of the fat tissue. And inflammation is the driving force behind this. So obesity, and the research talks about 82% of women with diabetics are overweight, and 48% are obese. So it's a major problem with the women. So everybody's delighted to naturally lose weight. But another part of our diet, particularly the healing aspect, is a high percentage of live food. What that means is you can eat half as much calories and get the full nutrition. So it's very easy for people to lose weight real easily. So that's kind of the key beginning place. The second thing that is important is sleep. People who do not get enough sleep, which is 5 to 6 hours, actually have a whole lot more diabetes in their life. So that's key to the process. Exercise is important, maybe not as important. I love to exercise because it stimulates what we call the group 4 receptors in the cells, which bring insulin into the cells, helps people move out of insulin resistance, and that's really, really important. So exercise, moderate, not heavy exercise, but moderate. If you're doing 16 to 23 minutes a day, you're going to create an optimal peak. So it's not asking people to do a whole lot. It's asking people to do moderate. And also we like the stretching exercise with the tri-yoga. So that's the second thing that's kind of really important in terms of that. I also find that women do well doing a little bit of weights, like even once a week, really helps create kind of a anti-gravity effect and treat osteoporosis. Why do I mention osteoporosis? Because it's a problem with diabetes. Diabetes causes is associated with osteoporosis for a variety of physiological reasons. So we want to move out of osteoporosis, which is a big issue for women. 36% at least women have osteoporosis. So when we go to vegan, we're cutting down the rate of osteoporosis by fourfold, and by doing anti-gravity exercise, you're also countering the tendency to osteoporosis. Insulin and leptin which are hormonal imbalances that get set off with diabetes, cause osteoporosis. So we have an excess initially. So that's another thing that really particularly helps women. Another thing is organic. And because of the pesticides, herbicides, and heavy metals, they're all associated with having a negative effect on the beta cells of the pancreas, which produce insulin. Another aspect of this is, as I say, organic, veganic, is people tend to eat less. And we know that the fat tissue creates inflammation in the system, which drives all chronic disease as well as diabetes. So as women lose the weight, they actually cut down on their inflammation, what I call it para-inflammation, which is key to reversing the diabetic process. And there's a few little things that are pretty important that people may not think about, but there was a French study with women, 66,000 middle-aged French women, and over 14 years, and they found that if you just had one soda drink a week, your risk of diabetes increases 33%. If you had two soda drinks a week, your risk of diabetes increases 50%. This is research specifically done with women. Now, if you think doing diet soda is better, it's not true. Diet soda actually is about 15% higher, creates 15% higher risk. So we don't really get out of it by going to diet soda. In fact, it's worse, probably because of the excitotoxins. Now, some of the research on the soda drink, which is really quite important, and most of the research has been done on women, really is it's we know that we're going to vary. Some people say you have 10 times more diabetes with soda drinking. If you're just drinking one can of soda a month, it may be 22%. So there are some variations, but the point is we really have to get off the carbohydrates, the junk food for carbohydrates. The driving force behind the genetic downgrade and the epigenetic downgrade is primarily white sugar, white flour, junk food, and processed food. Those are the driving forces. Then lack of sleep, and 7 hours is what we need. Lack of exercise, lack of organic food.
Gabriel, we just have seconds to go. I'm sorry, but could you just off the top of your head tell us if someone had to make a change today who is not familiar with this program or nutrition, give them your top list, your top 10 best foods to include in. They know what to exclude, all the processed foods, the hamburgers, hot dogs, french fries, pizzas, ice creams, but tell them specific foods.
Perfect. I'm just going to start with white sugar is the big.
Now, they know what not to have. Tell us the best.
And this is what we ask people to do, is go very high with it. You're good with your healthy carbohydrates. That's vegetables, sprouts, leafy greens. Then we go to nuts and seeds. Walnuts, for example, a helping of walnuts a day actually cuts down your rate of getting diabetes by 25%. So nuts and seeds are very healthy. The leafy greens, the greens are very, very good for you. And then the sea vegetables. Those are your big players that help people come back to a normal metabolism. And then the variation within that. If people want a little bit of fruit, blueberry and blueberries are also seen to be helpful. So those are your kind of sweeping but very, very key things to follow.
Okay. We appreciate it. Dr. Gabriel Cousins.
I'd like to say one more thing. The key to this is loving yourself enough to want to heal yourself.
I absolutely agree with you. His book is There is a Cure for Diabetes, and his website is treeoflifecenterus.com. Thank you very much, Gabriel. We'll have another longer conversation on another topic in the near future. I'm Gary Nall. We're out of time. Thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more tomorrow.